Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings here. I'm recording this on a Saturday afternoon, January 25th. I wanted to check in really quick on a major kind of development, I guess, in wrestling media. That's kind of taken place over the last 24 to 48 hours. I haven't talked about wrestling media all that much lately. I know that's kind of one of the hallmarks of this show, and I know a lot of people might tune in to listen to my thoughts on that, so I apologize for that. For a lot of reasons, I feel like I've been fighting a losing battle in a lot of ways in terms of wrestling media. In media in general, I just think we're at the space where it's going to be what it's going to be, and that's going to be a lot of conspiracy theories and unverified information being talked about way too much. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today in a lot of ways. If people are not familiar with the recent Ibu story going around, I'm going to get into that quite a bit. And I want to preface it by saying I don't mean this to talk like a ton about Ibu himself and what specifically did, but more use it as an example of what has gone wrong with wrestling media and ultimately how problematic it is when we discuss wrestling, what do we usually end up talking about and how relevant is what we're talking about to the actual product? Because at the end of the day, so much time is spent on talking about backstage rumors and gossip and unverified information, and it all conflates to hurt our overall understanding of the wrestling business. So really quick, and from my perspective, my understanding of Ibu is that he was a guy who gained some traction on Twitter for giving out his takes on wrestling, which is not uncommon. He was under the account, named Backup Hangman, kind of as like a loose parody Adam Page account, kind of a goofy name that many people have on Twitter. And people liked his takes, I suppose, and he gained popularity, which again is not uncommon. There are plenty of people out there on all sorts of social media that have gained a level of prominence because people like hearing what they have to say about wrestling, or they think that they're funny or anything like that. And slowly that has kind of been parlayed into like a pseudo news career, I guess. He helped start Wrestle Purist, which was like a Twitter brand. And then they had a website, and basically seemed like he parlayed some popularity he got on social media with some friendliness with wrestlers into some sort of loose wrestling source reporting. And I will always say that, especially in terms of wrestling reporting, anyone who has real verified information in wrestling should be putting that information out there on a paywall or at least an individual site. And anyone that is just quote unquote, like giving, someone who's like giving scoops away on the internet, like on Twitter, on social media, or in a Discord channel, and isn't getting money out of that, and makes me think that they don't really have reliable information. Because if they did, they'd be trying to make a buck off of it. This is capitalism, baby. Who is giving this stuff away for free if they feel really confident in it? Probably nobody. It's a way to make money off of it. And so when you have someone like a Dave Meltzer or a Sean Ross Sapp or a Mike Johnson or people that I think have a really strong track record of getting reliable information out there, what do those guys all have? They have a web major website and a Patreon, or in the observer's case, subscribers, or all of that stuff, because they're making money, because they know that people want this information and they feel comfortable enough sharing that information and feeling like it's verified and accurate enough to charge money for it. And that, in a lot of ways, distinguishes them as reliable news sources, as opposed to people that are just using some scuttlebutt to get some likes on Elon's app. So I guess that kind of begins my whole, the whole sense of the problem. And again, it's not necessarily a problem directly with Eboo as much as it's a problem with the way the general wrestling fandom online seems to be willing to accept almost any amount of information as accurate, or at least with enough kernels of truth that it warrants widespread discussion. So we end up having these talking points about things that maybe or maybe didn't even happen backstage. And they kind of create so much of the dialogue in terms of wrestling. And again, we're getting this information. It's really hard to justify that it's fully verified when it's just being scuttlebutt that's promoted on Twitter. So that's kind of the start of everything. And then this week, I guess, Eboo has this Discord now where I think you can pay to become a member of this Discord, which is kind of like a paywall, but kind of not. It's not like a Patreon page like Fightful has. It's not like its own separate kind of paywalled website like The Observer has. It's like some sort of go-between between like, I have this juicy gossip, I can't really verify it, but I kind of want to make some money off of it. So if I just put it in a Discord and I can have it kind of under the guise that people are hanging out with me and I'm just kind of shooting the shit, then maybe I can escape some culpability that comes from, you know, putting out random gossip that I can't really verify, or I can twist in certain ways to fit certain narratives. That's how that felt to me, the idea. Like, we're gonna go this half measure where I could try to make some money off of my gossip, but I don't really want to like charge for my gossip. So I'll kind of put it under the guise of you can be a part of this community if you join my Discord channel and you can get to these rooms. And then maybe you'll get some of the quote-unquote news from me as well. So that's my interpretation of it. I'm sure people would dispute that, but that's just kind of where my sensors are in terms of why it was put on this Discord channel. Anyway, turns out he put out a bunch of gossip. Of course it got out. The idea was that it wasn't supposed to get out. And I keep hearing this refrain like, oh, Eboo's really smart. Eboo has been on the internet for a really long time. He understands how all this works. And I've heard that from many, many different people. But at the same time, like, how could someone that's smart, that's been on the internet for a long time, think that opening something up on a Discord channel and that stuff not being screenshot, that stuff not being leaked, letting the general public in to just see some stuff that they're supposedly not supposed to share anywhere else, that would never, ever work in a million years. Like, my 63-year-old mother would know not to do that online. And she barely knows how to unlock her phone. So the idea that it was anticipated this would never get out, I'm pretty dubious about that in general. But some information gets out. There was the major things would be a story regarding rumors and gossip regarding Britt Baker maybe cheated on Adam Cole backstage. That's something that could have happened, right? So let's just toss that out there without really any regard into what that's going to do. There is also information about Sky Blue's personal life backstage that I don't even want to get into. That was also in there. And then, of course, I think the thing that's getting the most rounds is this idea that Tony Khan, like, was yelling at Eboo about all of these, how frustrated he is with all of his wrestlers, and he's mad about CM Punk, and he's mad about all these things and all that kind of stuff like that. So that's the stuff that kind of got leaked out over the past 24 hours or so that kind of a lot of people are talking about. And I think this is all harkens back to just kind of like a level of unprofessionalism across wrestling media. It's not that, like, I don't think Eboo is necessarily like a dastardly figure who's this bad faith actor that's going, doing all of these things maliciously. What I think is this is a complete amateur kind of stepping into the shoes of a realm that requires a lot of professionalism, and they don't have that kind of training or that background or that knowledge to do things in a professional way. And so we end up with a lot of unprofessionalism. And the issue is because wrestling media is devoid of a lot of professionalism and a lot of people that understand basic news practices, the result is someone like Ibu that does occasionally pop up with some gossipy information gains a foothold and gains attraction. And people look to that person as a role, as a source of information, a source of news, and someone that sets the tone for the dialogue surrounding professional wrestling. And again, as I said in the beginning, ultimately that just muddies up our overall understanding of professional wrestling, because so much in time is energy is spent on a bunch of unsourced, unverified, gossipy bullshit. And that's the state that wrestling media is in. It's a state where that a lot of media overall is in, but it's especially prevalent in wrestling because of the total lack of reliable news sources outside of a very handful of people. And those handful of people, like Dave Meltzer and like Sean Brassap, have their own weaknesses in terms of citing sources and things like that, that I've talked about many, many times on this podcast. I want to point out one of the biggest pieces of controversy, which is the idea that, you know, Ibu, he was on a voice chat, which is, again, popular, like, on these social media things. Like, you can have the I think it's rooms on Twitter. Like, you can have a room where you kind of just it seems like it's just like a live podcast that people can listen to on Twitter, or a similar kind of thing in Discord, right? You can have a voice chat room in Discord where people just kind of shoot the shit. And that's fine, but Ibu, you know, told this story about how he got all these, you know, he was talking to Tony Khan, and Tony Khan was allegedly yelling at him about all this stuff. And he even did like an impersonation about like, oh, the blah, 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 you know, all these wrestlers, they're ungrateful. Nobody appreciates me, blah, 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 blah. And like, it turns out that Tony doesn't think he was yelling at him. In fact, this was over direct messages, I'm assuming off of Twitter. So what was going on was that Tony was sending these messages supposedly to Ibu, and Ibu was recalling them as like an angry conversation that he had with Tony, and Tony was yelling at him, which would make it seem like at the very least that they were talking over the phone or on Zoom or even in person. But instead it was just some DMs, which of course anyone that has ever sent a text message or had a conversation through text or email or DM understands that like a lot of emotion and tone and nuance is totally lost in text-based conversation, right? It's not nearly as effective to getting real verified information as opposed to having a real conversation with somebody. And I think that's like a really important example is this particular incident and story, which is like, you're going to have this conversation with somebody. And I believe he really had a conversation with Tony Khan. I even believe that Tony Khan probably said a lot of the things that Ibu said he did. But there's a major difference between saying someone was yelling, as in their voice is being raised and yelling at you, as opposed to someone sending some things in text. And just like as an example, this is a quick journalism lesson for anybody. In journalism, if you are getting a quote from somebody, and you get that quote via text, that could be they email you an answer, they text you an answer, you get it in like a press release or a media statement, the way you attribute that quote would be not that person said, but that person stated, because they stated something, which implies that they had time and they came up with a decision to say something in very particular choice of words because they were typing it. It wasn't like they just said it off the cuff or had to respond quickly during an in-person interview. So like, for example, if I email Tony Khan and I said, you know, Tony, why is there a four-way women's match on Collision this week? And he would say, and he emailed back to me and said, you know, the AEW, you know, the women's four-way is part of a proud tradition of AEW's history. And I would say, if I was then subsequently writing a story, I would say, in quotes, the AEW, the four-way match, women's four-way is a proud tradition in the history of AEW, quote, comma, Tony Khan stated. So anything that's said to you during text should be said that is stated. That's just like a, this is something you learn in journalism school. It's like journalism 101. If you talk to somebody in person, or maybe you talk to them over the phone and they say something, then you attribute them as saying that they said, right? If I, instead of emailing that question to Tony Khan, I talk to Tony Khan over the phone, or I asked him that question at one of the AEW pressers, and he said those words, I would then say, Tony Khan said. So that's like a really basic journalism lesson that maybe like the average public doesn't know, but something you learn like on the first day of journalism school is the difference between attributing something as stated versus attributed something as said. And I only point that out because I think that would kind of highlight the difference between like a basic standard of professionalism and what we're left with a lot of professional wrestling reporting, which is in this instance, someone alleging that to us that Tony Khan was yelling at them, when not only was Tony Khan not actually yelling at them, he wasn't even actually talking to them. He was texting with them. That's a major, major distinction. And that distinction should be made if you feel like you are going to be reporting on that information. And when that information's not made, then that is a huge issue. And I think that ultimately is one of the major, major problems with this whole thing. And again, it highlights the lack of professionalism that we're seeing on display. And the fact that there's such a big following for this and people want to talk about it also shows the kind of level of professional unprofessionalism that exists. And I think a lot of the reason it gained traction was also because it fits a really easy narrative to paint about Tony Khan, that Tony Khan is out of control, that Tony Khan is talking to some random media member and he's just screaming at them about how ungrateful his roster is and all this kind of stuff. And that fits a very easily painted narrative that's been constructed around Tony Khan and around AEW since the company was first announced, which is Tony's in over his head, the backstage is a mess, he doesn't know how to lead, he's out of his depth, all this kind of stuff. It fits that narrative perfectly. And maybe all of that is actually true, but you're not going to get that from someone doing an impersonation of Tony Khan yelling at them when realistically he never was even talking to them in the first place. And again, that shows the harm that's being done here, right? We're getting a really inaccurate portrayal of Tony Khan in the media and his relationship with some media members and the kind of attitude that he seems to have backstage. We're getting that in a very inaccurate way, all because somebody that doesn't know what they're doing is trying to pretend like they know what they're doing. And the result is this complete mess. And Tony is rightfully very upset about this, not only because he was burned when he thought was, I'm sure he thought this was a private conversation, but also because he was mischaracterized even when his off the record comments were presented to the general public. So that whole thing is just a complete mess. And again, I think it highlights the kind of state that wrestling media is in. The other thing I want to touch on really quick is, and we talked about the Tony Khan thing, but there was also things about Britt Baker and things about Sky Blue. And this is getting into their personal lives. Like, there was some slander like out there that, oh, Britt Baker, you know, I think Conan said it on his podcast at one point. Again, Conan's like not like a reliable source of information either. Britt Baker cheated on Adam Cole or whatever. And I don't want to get into the backstage gossip, but I want to highlight something that I think is really important that everyone understands. And that's that specifically when we're talking about women in wrestling, and when we're talking about women in their personal lives in wrestling and who they're dating and who they're having sex with, everyone should be handling that subject with extreme care. Because unfortunately, as part of our society, women, especially famous, attractive women on social media, are generally treated extremely poorly by the general public. And so if we're going to be out here spreading rumors about what women are doing in their private lives and what if they did something wrong or unjust in their private life, you have to understand that those women are going to get way, way, way more shit from people than if you're saying that about a man. That's just a basic reality. And part of being a journalist is also understanding whether something is relevant enough to report. Personally, I don't really care if Britt Baker was having sex with 100 guys backstage. Doesn't make a difference to me. I don't think that's really news relevant personally. I'm sure that would get a lot of clicks because it's so scandalous. But the reality is it's not really relevant to our understanding of wrestling at all. And I would never report it because it's someone's personal life that has really no relevance to professional wrestling in general or Britt Baker's career or anything like that. It doesn't seem like that's really relevant at all. I mean, people maybe can dispute that, but to me, I wouldn't really consider that newsworthy. But is it gossipy? Yes. Will people give you a lot of attention on social media if you post such a thing? Absolutely, which is probably why it was got posted in the first place. And it comes with the risk that whether it's Britt Baker or Sky Blue or any of these women, unfortunately, are in a position where they're going to get so much shit for this kind of stuff. And they're going to get all sorts of vile, mean, terrible things said about them on social media. And it's something that they have to deal with. And it's something that you have to be careful of if you're going to pretend to be a member of the wrestling media and you're going to report on some of this stuff, whether it's true or not. Even if it's totally true and you can totally verify it, you have to think, wow, is this really relevant to what, you know, I want to report, what I want my image to be? Do you want to be the National Enquirer? Do you want to be TMZ? Or do you want to have a level of standard and practices for what you're going to be reporting on? And you want to be seen as a trusted source of information that reports relevant stuff, as opposed to just useless bullshit that might get you some clicks and might get you some Elon pennies. It's one thing, like Tony, you can you can fuck over Tony Khan with how you report about him. But, you know, Tony Khan is also a billionaire that runs a wrestling company, and there's not going to be as much sympathy for him there if he gets a bunch of shit on social media for that. I still think it's wrong from a journalism practice perspective, but I don't think that, that's one thing. It's totally different when you're just talking about, you know, Sky Blue, who's what, a 23-year-old woman backstage, and she had an affair with this person or whatever. Like, that's total bullshit. That doesn't need to be reported to the general public. And we already know that we don't know if that can really be a verified source of information, given on what else is in your track record as a reporter. So, to do that is, I think, totally uncalled for, totally unprofessional. And it also makes it way more difficult for women to get a foothold in this industry if they feel like anytime they maybe take a step outside of what society would deem to be acceptable behavior for a woman, that they're going to get wrung out and chastised by a bunch of psychos on social media because someone posted a backstage gossipy rumor that probably doesn't even have all the information in hand. So you got to be careful with what you're reporting around that kind of stuff, especially with women, because of the society we live in. It's not fair at all. I would love to live in a world where we cared as much about what men were doing and sleeping and who they were sleeping with as we did with women, but we don't. So until we live in a society where that's fair, you have to take those kind of rumors and gossip with an extreme care. And really, I don't really find almost any circumstances whether they're relevant enough to report them or not. So that's another thing that I think we got to look out for here is, and again, it shows a lack of judgment. And I think that's really the kind of key I want to get with all of this is that, what does it take to be a good reporter? I've been a news reporter for 10 years. So I like to think I know a little bit about what I'm talking about. I think having sources and having information is only a part of being a good reporter. It's definitely relevant. It's in terms of wrestling reporting, it's almost a necessity, right? You need to have sources. You need to have people telling you things in order for you to be able to publish news. But it's only a small part of everything. I think a huge part of it is having good judgment. Right? Having the kind of judgment to know when you're getting all of this information said to you. And everyone knows that wrestlers like to talk and people like to get backstage and people like to push their certain agendas with media members. That's something we talk about all the time. So there's no shortage of necessary information getting out there and getting to you, but it requires really good judgment to understand what information is necessary. What information are my readers interested in or my listeners interested in? And how can I report this in a responsible, factual way? And that requires really good judgment and instincts. And I think what we learned this week, at least from Ebu standards, but it's probably true for a lot of different people in wrestling media, they don't have really any good judgment at all. And that's why we're in this mess. And that's ultimately, again, a really big example of why we have these amateurs running around that don't know what they're doing, don't have any experience working in real news. And the result is just a really baffling display of unprofessionalism. And I think a big piece of that comes down to the poor judgment. So it requires proper judgment. And a lot of people just don't have that. I say, like, news, to be a good journalist, you need to have curiosity and persistence, right? You need to be curious. You need to constantly be asking why. You need to constantly be questioning what kind of information you're getting or why you would be getting that information. And you also need to be persistent. You have to go and get different sources. You have to go and talk to other people. And you have to really think about things, about what whether or not what you're going to report to the masses is relevant, is factual, has a benefit to your news service, or is it just something we're going to do for just some really quick, cheap attention? And I think a lot of that is lacking. And I think overall, the big issue and the reason we kind of have this situation is because wrestling companies and the wrestling industry as a whole is not media friendly. It exists on backstage rumors and gossip. There's so little formal news reporting in wrestling. It's all almost entirely based on backstage rumors and gossip. And you can double check that. You can triple check that. You can get it where you feel comfortable running with it, which is what the market leaders in wrestling media do. But at the end of the day, the wrestling companies themselves refusing to be transparent, refusing to have a lot of media access, leads to so much of the dominating conversation about their companies being gossip and unverified information, because the wrestling companies do not work directly with the media. And if they do, it's always, you know, under the table. Don't let it get back to us. Don't say that a WWE spokesperson told you this. Don't tell me that, you know, Tony Khan told you this directly. It's always, you know, keep this on the DL, but please get this out there. So, well, I wouldn't necessarily blame a lot of the talent. I would say the wrestling companies in general have played a major role in this being the current state of wrestling media because of the refusal to be transparent. So even if somebody wanted to come in and be a professional and do a good job, they would find it actually quite difficult because of how untransparent and unwilling a lot of wrestling companies are with working with the media. So a lot of this misinformation, at the end of the day, they kind of did it to themselves because it encourages amateurs with gossip rags to get into the business because that's the only information that's out there. So your wrestling fan base that's thirsty for all of this news is relying on these scraps that are getting out there from these people that have no idea what they're doing. And that is ultimately the big issue. So that's just kind of a quick episode on wrestling media. I wanted to kind of talk about that and share my experience and my perspective on things. I will add just a little bit. I want to change gears just for a second, tack this on at the end. I filled out my 2024 Wrestling Observer Newsletter award ballot. This is the first time I filled out a ballot in a few years, and I really want to thank Fred Moreland. Fred Moreland is a statistician, and he is also a co-host of The Good, the Bad, and the Hunky on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. And Fred developed a Google form sheet to make it easier to vote for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. And more impressive than coming up with the Google form sheet, he convinced Dave to use it. So for the first time ever, you can vote using a Google form sheet, which makes it so much easier to vote than typing all the categories and typing all your answers and sending that as an email out to Dave. So this made it way easier for me to vote. It's probably the main reason I voted this year was because it was on a Google form sheet. But I just want to go over my ballot really quick with you for people who care. If not, you can just end the podcast right now because that's all I'm going to be talking about for the rest of this podcast. Flair Fez, you know, pro wrestling MVP, you can rank your top three. I went with number one, Mystico, number two, Will Ospreay, number three, Yamato. I think Mystico is the best candidate who combines all of the strengths that you want to have in the criteria. He is a great drawing card for CMLL. He is by far their biggest star, their main event act, and he is also their, I wouldn't say he's the best wrestler in the company. He's probably not. I would say like Hechicero or Mascara Dorada right now are better wrestlers than Mystico, but he's good enough. I think he's had enough good matches. He's reliable enough that I don't see it working really against him. I would say he's a positive contributor in terms of his in-ring value. So I think when you combine all of that, he is the logical choice for Flair Thez. Will Ospreay, not as relevant from a business perspective as Mystico is, but I mean, just a phenomenal in-ring year, hard to ignore everything he did. So I think that makes sense. In Yamato, I think he was the best champion in wrestling this year in Dragon Gate. I talked about that a little bit on my last episode where we talked about the FSM 50 and I had him ranked fourth. I think he's had a phenomenal year. I think we're going to look back on 2024 and say, wow, that was the year Yamato really peaked, which is impressive because he's had a really long, really successful career. But I think he did an amazing job in Dragon Gate this year, both in the ring and as just an overall character in the company. So I feel pretty confident about that top three. I mean, it's a loaded field. There's a lot of people you could pick from using, you know, different interpretations of the criteria, but I feel good about that. Most outstanding wrestler. This was easy for me because I really just took who I picked for the top three in the FSM 50. And made that my list. So I had, you know, Will Ospreay number one, Konosuke Takeshita number two, and Zack Sabre Jr. number three. I don't really need to explain it, I think those are all great choices. If you picked one of those guys as number one, that's fine. I'm sure Bryan Danielson will also be in the mix as well, but I think that's a pretty self-explanatory category about why I picked those guys. Tag team of the year, you needed to rank three tag teams, which was actually a lot tougher than you think, because it just was not a great year for tag teams. I went with the Young Bucks. I've kind of been pushing this for the last few months. I think the Young Bucks are still a tag team of the year. Was it a peak Bucks year? No. But when you factor in their match against Darby Allin and Sting, which I think is going to go down as one of the most memorable matches of this decade. And I also think they had several other good matches. I like their match with the Private Party. Their trios work when when Okada was tagging with them, I think that was really good. And I do think that's relevant to Tag Team of the Year. Obviously, that's not just the tag team wrestling, but I think it definitely can be considered as part of the award. So I went with them. I also went with, in second place, Naruki Doi and Dragon Kid. They've really been carrying the Dragon Gate. They really carry the Dragon Gate, Open the Twin Gate Championships. For most of the year, and really had a great year for both of them. Great year for Dragon Kid. Probably Dragon Kid's best year in like 20 years in the ring, to be honest. And the number three was tough. I went with Private Party. I'm like their biggest fans. I know that. I know some people don't like them. I know their tag team title run kind of fizzled out. But I don't know. I just really like them. I thought their matches with the Young Bucks were really exciting. That's kind of like a vanity pick for three. They're probably not the third best tag team in the world this year, but I've said this before that I really like them. So I included them kind of in a vanity pick. Best down interviews. I've heard people kind of struggle with this. I think it's obvious. I think it's Hangman Page, without a doubt. His interviews have been incredible. I think he is the closest thing we've had since to like peak Cactus Jack and ECW. I just wrote a whole article about how great his feud with Christopher Daniels is and how great his character is. It's just the smoldering inferno of a man. And I think his promos have been absolutely fantastic to get that character over. I think he should clean up this award. I don't feel like there's a ton of buzz. For him to claim this award, it's probably going to go to someone from WWE. But I think he's just been absolutely fantastic on the stick this year. So he was my pick for best on interviews. They ask you to rank two and three. I honestly, like, after Hangman, I was kind of like a blank. I was like, I don't really know who I want to pick because I didn't think it was a great MJF year. I didn't think it's a great John Moxley year. So some of the people that you normally would pick, like The Rock was really good on promos, but he wasn't around the whole year. But so, like, how do you factor this all in? You know, Eddie Kingston wasn't around for most of the year. So it becomes, like, pretty difficult to come up with some other names. I've heard Drew McIntyre has been batted around. Obviously, you could say CM Punk if you're really into his WWE work, or maybe Kevin Owens. So it's definitely a tough award to come up with three people. I feel like outside of Hangman, I don't really feel like anyone has really stood out as a top on interview person. So I left my two and three blank just because I didn't really feel super confident in who to vote for. So I'm just like, I don't want to muddy this rank choice voting kind of thing. Just putting Hangman, moving on. promotion of the year, I went CMLL, and then I went Dragon Gate, and then I went AEW. AEW has its faults, but I still think it's relevant. And from an in-ring perspective, easily the best company in the world today. CMLL, again, I think is, if we're touching on all of the facets of pro wrestling in terms of being able to, a successful drawing card, good matches, a product that makes sense to me, I think that's a clear and easy call for promotion of the year. And also, like, I'm not giving shit to WWE this year, so CMLL is going to be the company I'm leaning on to vote for stuff instead of WWE, just because I hate WWE's product so much that I'm not going to give it credit for promotion of the year, even though it obviously made the most money out of any wrestling company, and maybe that's the whole point of a promotion. Best weekly TV show, I went with Dynamite, then I went with Collision, and then I went with CMLL Super Viernes. Their Friday night Arena Mexico shows. You know, I didn't really do a thorough analysis on whether or not I think Collision or Dynamite is better. I just feel like Dynamite's the bigger, more relevant show, so I've probably enjoyed more stuff on Dynamite. But Collision does have a kind of a different tone. It's a little bit more serious, a little bit more of a wrestling show in a lot of ways. So you can make the case that Collision is actually better than Dynamite, but I feel like they're probably pretty close and even. So I just went 1-2 with them. And then CMLL and Super Viernes. Again, CMLL, really good year. From a business perspective, and I always find those shows to be entertaining. I'm not going to sit here and say I watched all 52 of them this year, but I definitely think in terms of like a weekly TV show, it's better than like Impact, it's better than Ring of Honor, it's better than anything WWE is doing for sure. So I think it's a worthy inclusion. Pro Wrestling Match of the Year. I went with, again, I filled out my Match of the Year top 10 for the Voice of Wrestling Match of the Year, so I had this pretty in lockstep. I went with Darby Allin and Sting versus the Young Bucks at AEW Revolution. As I said last week in my podcast with Gerard, to me, that match is full of love and love for professional wrestling and love for Sting, and it just makes you feel good as a pro wrestling fan. It's a great match. It's dramatic. Darby almost died jumping through the glass. There was so much, there was plenty of action, but it was just such a fun, exciting match that was full of love and made you really appreciate professional wrestling and what it can do and what it's meant to people. And I wasn't even a big Sting fan before he showed up in AEW. So it's not like I'm a kid from 1991 that loves Sting. You know, I was pretty Sting neutral, but you can't watch that match and not feel something. And it comes across in the match. So it's a match kind of unlike any other match, really, in the running for this award. Then 2 and 3, there's so many other great matches. It's kind of hard to say. I went with Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita from Revolution. I've kind of said, I think that's my favorite Ospreay match from this year. He's had so many. He had the match with Swerve. He had the match with Bryan Danielson. But that, to me, I don't know why. It's not quite as epic or as dramatic as like the Danielson match or like the 60-minute MJF match, but it was just two guys that are at the peak of their powers, that are incredible athletes, that do a ton of cool moves. It was an incredible showcase for Ospreay and Takeshita. So that was my number two. And my number three, it was so hard to pick. I went with the Lights Out match, or the Texas Death match between Swerve Strickland and Hangman Page. You know, the cage match was fun too, but I just love that match. I love the violence. I think the Texas Death matches are like the best things AEW does, especially Hangman Texas Death matches. So that was my top three for match of the year. United States, Canada, Pro Wrestling MVP. Again, these are, I just kind of look at like what my Flair Fez awards were and just give it to that person. So this was pretty easy. Canada, United States, Will Ospreay. Japan MVP, Yamato. And then Mexico MVP, Mystico, obviously. So I just kind of, it was helpful that my three answers for Flair Thez were all from different parts of the country or different parts of the world and categories. So just hit up all those MVPs right there. The Pro Wrestling Hodge Award non-heavyweight MVP. This is a really difficult award for me to like kind of assess, because very few wrestling companies still use like weight classes. Like, it's really just some of the Japanese promotions like All Japan and New Japan. And then Mexico kind of does it, but it's not as serious. And most of the people that would be classified as non-heavyweights are wrestling, you know, for the top titles in Mexico. So to me, it's just hard to say, like, there's no real definition. Like, it's not like any wrestler listed under 220 pounds, right? That would be kind of like the traditional junior heavyweight award. But then, like, what about like women wrestlers, like the scale is different for them. Like, I'll just say Chihiro Hashimoto is probably under 220 pounds, but would not be classified as a non-heavyweight, I think. Her wrestling style is like all power, just suplexes and throwing people around, throwing women that are much smaller than her around. So I don't really understand it. It's different than the Best Flying Wrestler Award. So for me, it was just like, I just went with Yamato because I'm like, Yamato is probably, you know, but like then I should I put up Mystico because I have Mystico higher in the Fuertes, and Mystico is also a non-heavyweight. He's like under 200 pounds. So like, I don't know what to do with that one. I just said Yamato. I see like a lot of people tossing like Darby Allin. Like it's just a hard, there's no real standard for it because we don't have really concrete junior heavyweights. Like if it was just like, who is the best junior heavyweight wrestler in a junior heavyweight division? It'd be like, okay, like Doki, maybe would be an award for the person for that, but just, it's so hard to come up with that. I don't really like it. I would like a little bit clearer distinction on what that award is supposed to be. Women's wrestling MVP. I went with Sarai, Suri, I can never pronounce her name right. I apologize, Joshi fans. But don't, I won't apologize too much because I did name her Women's Wrestling MVP. Again, pretty easy. She was my highest ranked wrestler on the FSM 50. That was a woman. She's been fantastic all year, both as a, especially when you consider like her booking of her promotion and the kind of praise that that's gotten. So you take, you know, her booking and her work as an independent wrestling promoter, in addition to her excellent in-ring output. She's clearly my choice. Feud of the year, Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland, upset on that. Obviously I thought that was one of the best feuds in the last 10 years. Just absolutely great stuff by both performers. Most improved, I had a hard time with this because I was just thinking and I was like, I don't really know anyone that made a huge jump. I think Commander would probably be the most obvious one, but you know what, I said David Finlay. And maybe David Finlay didn't actually improve as a wrestler all that much this year, but he really thrived in a bigger position when he was thrust into it. And I was kind of doubtful he was going to be able to succeed. So I have a lot of respect for him. I know I didn't include him in the FSM 50, but I think he had a really strong year. And I think he really stepped up to the plate in a difficult situation, stepping over, taking over the role, you know, that Jay White had vacated. And I think he just did a really, really solid job and I think raised his ceiling as an individual wrestler. So I have him as most improved. Most charismatic, I went with Mystico. Again, I think his crowd connection, his ability to work with that CMLL crowd is unlike anyone else in wrestling. So he's kind of an easy call for me for most charismatic. Best technical wrestler award, I went with Zack Sabre Jr. I had him ranked just above Bryan Danielson in my FSM 50. Can't go wrong with, you know, Bryan Danielson or Zack Sabre Jr. or Hedgesera, who I think will get a lot of praise as well. But Zach obviously took the technical wrestling style and brought it to a place that we hadn't seen it before, which is really with the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship and really running with that. So credit for him. Most overrated. This one's tough. But I went with Solo Sikoa just in terms of someone that's pushed far beyond their talent ability. Just a complete zero in pretty much all facets of professional wrestling, and even hardcore WWE fans don't even defend him. Thought his match at SummerSlam against Cody was terrible. Just a big zero and nothing in the ring. So he's most overrated. Most underrated, that one was actually tough for me because I was thinking about, there's a lot of WWE wrestlers, like I think Bianca Belair in terms of someone that has just been totally overlooked from a talent perspective. Is probably the right person for this award. That's ultimately who I decided to give it to. But it's hard to do that because like in WWE, like the way their booking is, you could kind of give a bunch of people most underrated because a lot of people, very few people are given shine. And there's also a lot of people in AEW you can make the same case for. So it's a really difficult one to come up with. Best non-wrestler or performer. I was ready to give this to Don Callis, but I pivoted it at the last second. I said, you know what? It's MVP. And I know MVP just wrestled a match, but I still think he counts for this award. I think he's been absolutely tremendous with this Hart Syndicate and everything like that. Getting over in AEW, his promos are great. His, you know, mannerisms, his I love his just his attitude and his facial reactions doing when he's doing these interviews and these promos and he's talking about other people. I think he's done a great job, so he's my pick. Best television announcer, Walker Stewart. Absolutely great year, him doing New Japan Pro Wrestling. I already praised him a few times when I talk about Wrestle Kingdom. but I think he's done a great job, and probably not the last one of these awards he's going to win, given I think he's like 22 years old. So great job by Walker Stewart. He's my best television announcer. Worst television announcer. There's so many options for this, especially in WWE. I just went with Pat McAfee. I hate him. I can't stand him. I think he's super annoying. I think he's toxic. I think he sounds like, for some reason, he always sounds like he just got done running to catch a bus when he's talking. Just awful, awful stuff. Best major show, AEW Revolution. That was pretty obvious because it had my top two of my batch of the year votes were for AEW Revolution. It's really hard. The rest of the show would have to be so bad for that not to be considered the best major show when you see the two best matches of the entire year on the same show. And the rest of the show was good. You had like Brian Danielson versus Eddie Kingston on that show as well. But you have the Sting retirement match. You have the Ospreay Takeshita match. Easy, easy, easy call for best major show. Worst major show, a lot of options. I went with WWE SummerSlam, which is a show I actually watched. Really bad crowd. Really bad matches. Main event was terrible. Main event was totally built around just Roman Reigns showing up at the end, which everyone thought he was going to do. Awful, awful stuff. Huge pass. You had the CM Punk Drew McIntyre bracelet match, which was awful. Just absolutely hated that stuff. Best wrestling maneuver. You know, this one's really hard because it's kind of cool to go back and look at these awards. Like, oh, what was the best wrestling maneuver? And like, oh, yeah, that was when Liger shooting star press was over. Or like, oh, Rey Mysterio winning in 1995 for the West Coast Pop. That was such an innovative move at the time, and it's recognized in these awards. But it's really hard in real time for me to kind of come up with one. I just thought, you know, what is a, you know, signature or finisher that I see that I just always love watching? And kind of blows my mind. What's like the coolest move? And I went with Commander's springboard reverse Harakirana. That's kind of Harakirana where he jumps off the springboard like kind of backwards. So he lands in like on the shoulders in like a victory roll position and then does the reverse Rana. I just think that's so cool. And the way he does it, the way he pulls it off is so awesome. So I think that's a fitting logic to vote for when it comes to best wrestling maneuver. Most disgusting promotional tactic. What a year for most disgusting promotional tactic. We say this every year, but seriously, what a year for it. I had to go with WWE using elements of the Janelle Grant lawsuit in the Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio feud, especially with Dom showing the pictures of supposed nude photos Liv Morgan sent to him, and he's showing them backstage to all the members of his little gang there. And that was really seemed to be ripped straight out of the Janelle Grant lawsuit with what Vince was doing with photos of Janelle Grant to WWE production crew. So that's what I went with there. But you could say a lot of different things about WWE, sadly. Worst television show, WWE NXT. Absolutely worst show. One of the worst shows in wrestling history that's been on television on a weekly basis. Offensive to anyone that likes pro wrestling. Worst match of the year. This was tough. Because there have been some really, really, really bad matches. I went with the Kota Ibushi match from the start of the year, Noah, where Kota Ibushi allegedly wrestled with two broken ankles. It's just a really, really sad match. There's a lot I can do. I think a lot of people will talk about the bracelet match between CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, or the main event of SummerSlam. There's all sorts of matches that kind of fell apart. But that one, the sad Kota Ibushi match, it's kind of hard to beat that one. Worst feud of the year. Again, this one's kind of tough with like, when is this feud going to end? I just went with the Liv Morgan versus Dominic in Dominic Mysterio angle just because of the whole Janelle Grant thing. I think that's a really lockup for worst feud of the year. Worst promotion, WWE obviously is terrible. And they offend me as a professional wrestling fan. So they're an easy check for worst promotion. Best booker, I went with Penico. Juan Mandel Mar, who does CMLL. Again, don't really need to justify that because I've already covered why I think CMLL has been so successful and deserves these awards from business and in-ring perspective. Great job this year from CMLL. Best gimmick. It's hard for me to do best gimmick. I just went with Hangman Page. Is he really a gimmick? Like, he's not a gimmick. Like, Orange Cassidy, that's a gimmick. The guy who wrestled on Level Up that had, like, Homeowners Association gimmick where he came out with like the white picket fence and things like that. That's a gimmick. Hangman Page being furious, is that really a gimmick? Probably not, but he's my most interesting character, so I went with him. Worst gimmick, gosh, there's so many of them, but you know what? I went with the Death Riders because I hate them. And maybe that's a little, it's probably not the worst gimmick. Like Wendy Chu is probably a worse gimmick than the Death Riders. But there's so much wrong with the Death Riders. We're going to get into that in a future episode of the show, but just not a huge fan of Death Riders. But that's it. Those are my awards. So it was a little bit of talk about WrestleMania and then a little bit of my awards. So hopefully people enjoyed this kind of shorter episode. And I'll talk to you again after a while. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.